I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years, which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. This day in history. In 1835, the Texan army captured the city of San Antonio from Mexican troops in their struggle for independence. In 1854, The Charge of the Light Brigade by poet Alfred Lord Tennyson is published, describing British troops fighting in the Crimean War. And in 1940, English forces attack Italian troops in North Africa during the Egyptian campaign against the Axis powers during World War II. Today we're going to be talking about an event which occurred after the famous Battle of the Brandywine, which receives much less attention from scholars and history buffs, the Battle of Paoli, or what has been sometimes called the Paoli Massacre. On September 20th, 1777, British troops under William Howe made a surprise night attack against Continental soldiers under the command of General Anthony Wayne. The Americans were caught off guard and suffered many casualties. There were even reports of brutality by the attacking British troops, who supposedly butchered several American soldiers with bayonets, thus leading to the term massacre. These reports have been discussed and debated over the decades, with some British sources claiming that the attack was conducted according to the generally accepted principles of war, but some Americans still maintaining that it was an unnecessary and horrific torturing of Continental soldiers. The event occurred in Malvern, Pennsylvania, and the site is there today for people to visit and explore. Today we're going to be talking with Jim Crist, Vice President of the Paoli Battlefield Preservation Fund. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gene. Glad to have you aboard.
Yeah, thank you for being with us. Just right up front, for our listeners who may not really know, exactly where is Paoli Battlefield?
The Paoli Battlefield is in the borough of Malvern, in Chester County, Pennsylvania. The battle was named the Battle of Paoli, or the Paoli Massacre, because of the Paoli Tavern, which stood generally in the same location that the post office is in downtown Paoli. Paoli at that time was sort of the middle ground, the in-between ground between the British troops and the American troops. The borough of Malvern was incorporated in 1889, of course, much later than the battle. That's why it is still called the Battle of Paoli, even though it is in Malvern, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Was it a battle or just more like a skirmish?
Oh, it was definitely a battle. People go to the site today and they see a grave site where 52 dead patriots lie that were casualties of that battle. And they think, well, it was just a skirmish, maybe at most 1,000 men. No, this was a full-on battle. We had approximately a little over 2,000 troops on the side of the British and the Americans. We also had another 2,000 that were en route when the attack happened. They actually figure into the battle total because they were engaged at the point. So this is definitely a major battle that did happen.
Yeah, was General Washington nearby? I don't believe he actually was physically there. Is that correct?
No, you are correct. After the Battle of the Clouds, which is the next battle after Brandywine, it was shaping up to be another Brandywine. It was sort of over towards where over where Immaculata College now sits. Washington was going to be flanked on both sides, much like he was outflanked at Brandywine. What happened was the clouds opened up, and we're not talking a gentle rain. We're talking a good nor'easter, even possibly a hurricane happened. General Washington retreated, went to Yellow Springs, split his army up. He went towards Reading, towards the furnaces, to get supplies. He let Anthony Wayne behind the British to try to get in a position to attack the rear guard as they were in motion, not when they lay in their camps.
Yeah, supposedly this was the event that caused American troops to later have a rebel yell or battle cry, "Remember Paoli."
That's correct. As we look through the history, of course, people remember, of course, a few days ago we just celebrated Remember Pearl Harbor. We also had Remember the Maine, as, you know, of course, our entry into the Spanish-American War. Remember Paoli gave us a battle cry. The Patriots were incensed that this was a massacre, In fact, the British light infantry to this day have a red insignia that they wear in their uniform. Basically what they did, if you're talking after the Battle of 1777, they heard all the criticism coming from the Patriot side that this was a massacre. They dipped their white feathers in red ink and put them on their cap, and they say, if you see us again, we're the guys with the red feathers that come after us. We'll teach you a lesson.
Well, how many men were actually killed or wounded on both sides, you know?
Well, we kind of have a general count. There's a good article in the American Journal of the Revolution. There are the Journal of the American Revolution. It's on our website, which is rememberpaley.org. It refers to Paley as the ninth bloodiest battle of the Revolutionary War. Generally accepted, probably around 300 casualties. It's really hard to tell because when the troops were attacked, a lot of them scattered. So they weren't in a necessary camp. They weren't all in one place. They were all over the place in different areas, and it was really hard to get a final tally of what happened. When, of course, when the troops got back together and counts were performed, that's the generally accepted count, that it was probably around 300.
Now, were there also local militia units in the area or even participating in this skirmish or battle?
This was mainly the Pennsylvania Continental Line troops. These were, you know, these were crack veterans. They had seen battle before. These weren't untried militia. There is an element that does come into this. At the end of the battle, there was 2,000 troops under General Smallwood coming up from Maryland. They were raw Maryland militia, never seen battle before. A lot of them didn't have shoes. Some of them didn't even have weapons either. But they made the march up toward, they were actually on King Road, coming down to the battle site when they were attacked first by the Americans running in confusion. They didn't know what was going on. They just fired blindly. After both sides calmed down, the British actually showed up and engaged them as well, and pretty much that permanently scattered them.
Yeah, a lot of people know the Battle of the Brandywine as the largest battle of the American Revolution. Of course, a major loss for Washington, although he was a proven survivor, so he did survive and had the ability to fight another day. However, when Paoli occurred, this was not a good train of events. Obviously, the Continental Army was not in great shape after these two events.
Yeah, correct. I mean, you know, you had a lot of problems, and this is before the reorganization that happened at Valley Forge with General von Steuben. This was a wing of Washington's army that was attacked. This wasn't all of Washington's so many thousands of troops. This was, again, a line, basically Continental Line troops, Pennsylvania Line troops that were under the command of General Anthony Wayne that happened. As far as lessons that you can take out of this, obviously, one of the main sort of good fortunes that happened to the Americans was when the British column got to the General Warren Inn, they tortured a local blacksmith, or as the British say, they coerced him into giving him the information of the rebel camp. If he would have led them to the right and up Sugartown Road, they would have been in position for the game plan that they wanted. They wanted to attack Wayne from west to east and push them into another column that was waiting for him down by the Paley post office.
Interesting.
If that would have happened, Wayne's army would have been pretty much annihilated or probably surrendered.
Sure. And again, I just want to mention for our listeners, if anyone has a question, if you'd like to call in, our call-in line is 610-701-9243. That's for Living History. And just in terms of the two battles, obviously, Brandywine was far larger, but I'm guessing there were a lot of troops who had fought at Brandywine were actually at Paoli. Is that correct?
Yeah, there were some troops that did fight. You know, Anthony Wayne obviously fought a lot of rear guard action at Paoli. Some of those troops were also in at Paoli. It was really funny. We're looking over some of the soldier records, and we hear about, oh, this was a terrible night. It was horrible how bad things had been. And then we end with a line, it was a very bloody month, because these troops not only were at Brandywine, but at Clouds and also at Paoli. So they've seen a lot of action in just one short month.
Yeah. Were there any major repercussions, military, strategic, after this event for either side? I understand British did take Philadelphia, but were any other notable repercussions?
Well, you know, General Anthony Wayne was brought up on charges. He had a second in command actually try to. He was actually a British citizen who became an officer in the Continental Army. He thought that Anthony Wayne didn't perform well at Paoli. The charges were dismissed, but not to Anthony Wayne's satisfaction because his honor had been assaulted. He demanded a general court-martial, and in November, after the Battle of Germantown's had been fought, I think it was actually John Sullivan presided over his court-martial, where he was cleared of all charges and his honor was restored. You can say that about Anthony Wayne. For George Washington, obviously, it's a lesson. Washington was waiting above the Schuylkill for the British to cross, but he had a decision to make. Do I protect Philadelphia, the rebel capital, or do I protect my supply lines going back into Reading? He chose the supply lines in Reading, therefore the door was clear for the British troops to capture the capital. Of course, in European land wars, once you capture the enemy's capital, usually the war is over, but of course this wasn't the case in the American Revolution.
Good, very good point. We are about to take a short break, but we'll have commercials, but we'll be back with Jim Crist of the Paoli Battlefield Preservation Fund.
Do you enjoy hunting and fishing? Do you have pictures of your prize catch? Now through December, that's all you'll need to be entered in the Ram Trophy Room contest. Just go to the Ram Trophy Room at PennsWilds.com. Show off a little bit and submit your trophy picture, and you'll have a chance to win monthly prizes from Bosch, Steel, Mossy Oak, and more. And how about a grand prize from Under Armour? For official rules and more information, visit the Ram Trophy Room at PennsWilds.com.
Are you tired of looking up at that old, streaky, stained, tired, ugly roof? Tired of that ugly roof taking away from your home's curb appeal? G.P. Martini Roofing wants to solve your curb appeal woes with a new roof built with Atlas Pristine Shingles featuring Scotch Guard Protector from 3M. The only shingle with a lifetime limited warranty against algae streaks and stains. G.P. Martini's crews are highly trained professional installers of asphalt shingle roofs, and now with the power of Atlas Shingles and Scotchgard Protector from 3M, GP Martini will install a roof that will provide the lasting color you choose for as long as you're in your home. Let GP Martini Roofing have a look at that nagging leak, or just call to consult about upgrading the look for your prized investment. Call them today, 610-873-1696. Whether your need is residential or commercial, GP Martini Roofing has the expertise in-house to solve your problem, or to simply make your home or office look its best. 610-873-1696. That's the number to call. 610-873-1696. And one of those GP Martini trucks will be on its way to you.
Radio PA's Ask the Governor program brings you extended Q&As with Governor Tom Wolf, and you have a chance to be part of the show every month. Have a question or comment about taxes, government spending, or any other topic that impacts your life? Well, send your questions and comments to Governor Wolf anytime by visiting pamatters.com and clicking the Ask the Governor link at the top of the page. We'll present your questions to Governor Wolf during every show. John in Mount Lebanon wrote in, when are the politicians going to Hanover Township for our next question? And Phil writes in, will people buying food with Wilkes-Barre is our next stop. Anthony, the award-winning Ask the Governor program from Radio Pennsylvania, now featuring Governor Tom Wolf. Visit PAMatters.com to have your voice heard and to view video clips from all our Ask the Governor tapings. Ask the Governor is a production of Radio PA, Top Flight Media, and PAMatters.com.
This is Governor Tom Wolf. I'm ready to answer your questions, so stop by PAMatters.com today.
WCHE 1520 AM, bringing you all things Chester County from our palatial studios on West Gay Street in Uptown Westchester, the talk of Chester County. If you don't believe it, just ask your neighbor. They listen.
I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. Today, we're talking with Jim Crist of the Paoli Battlefield Preservation Fund. A lot of people have never really visited the battlefield, which is in historic Malvern, PA. Jim, if people visit in the coming days, what can they expect to see at the battlefield? Markers, monuments, that kind of thing?
Well, Gene, the battlefield is actually sort of divided in half. We have a memorial ground, which Malvern has a fireman's carnival there in July. There's tennis courts. There's a Little League baseball fields. There's a Boy Scout cabin. The other side of that, sort of adjacent to that, is the actual battlefield itself that I'm part of the Paley Battlefield Preservation Fund. The land is owned by the borough of Malvern, and it is administered by us, the Paley Battlefield Preservation Fund. In the battlefield itself, there are plaques that kind of guide you through different aspects of the battle. We list, for instance, the units that were there. We have a short write-up about General Anthony Wayne, about the even the Bowden farmhouse that once stood on that site. Next to that, adjacent to that, right up against it, is the Paley Memorial Association grounds, or the Paley Memorial grounds. The grave site and monument, the monument is actually the second oldest Revolutionary War monument built in 1817. You'll see that there. There's a Centennial 1877 monument along with World War I and World War II monuments that are there.
Interesting. Now, again, for our guests, if you want to visit their website, just go to paoleibattlefield.org or rememberpaoli.org. I understand the Paoli Battlefield is now under consideration for a government grant under what they call the American Battlefield Protection Program. Tell us a little bit about this program that helps preserve and protect historic sites.
Well, we've been a recipient of a few American Battlefield Protection Plan grants. They are grants that you have to apply for the federal government for the betterment and education of the public, and also to help protect the battlefield from encroachment. We were lucky, actually, back in 1996, we got some local funding along with some federal funding to actually save the battlefield from any kind of construction that would have destroyed it. Since then, we've had another grant to help with mapping, GIS mapping. In fact, if you go to our website, you can see a map of not only the Battle of Paoli, but also the Battles of Brandywine and the Battle of the Clouds. These are animated battle maps that Sean Moore, who's now a different supervisor, has created for us.
Interesting. Now, the Battlefield Protection Program, obviously it deals with just literally hundreds of sites around the U.S. which are historic, but also in some way threatened. Can you tell us about that? I mean, obviously a lot of concerns about encroachment from commercial or residential development. Let's just talk for a little bit about the program and how it's actually helping these sites.
Well, in our case, we're trying to get what's called national landmark status. In the case of Paoli, some people use it for various other things, buying easements. If somebody wants to sell their property, or you can do a conservation easement on it so that nothing can be, you know, built on that property that would affect the fabric of what's there. Our grant itself, with the new grant that we got last year from the American Battlefield Protection Plan, we want to get what's called national landmark status. It's actually a stringent criterion that you must meet, that it applies to something for all of America, not just a regional or a local thing happen here, but something of national significance. So we have a lot of good things going in our way for Paoli, but certainly the American Battlefield Protection Plan, you can also read, I think we have about four updates on our website that you can read each of the updates and see where we are in the process, but it helps us and helps America by saving and cataloging the history of events that happened at certain sites so they're preserved for the education for future generations.
Yeah, it's an important policy of the state and local officials and our federal government to try to preserve these sites. I know there's just literally hundreds of locations around the nation, even in, many here in Pennsylvania, which are under under threat of being encroached upon. Just as a comparison, I live down at Kennett Square, but I've been to the Brandywine Battlefield many times, and one local person, the Spackman Farm, was actually donated to, I believe, a trust, a historic trust. The Spackman Farm is literally right on the edge of where all the fighting was going on for the Battle of the Brandywine, and a lot of people are putting their land into historic trusts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also a very helpful thing. The trusts also help preserve for in perpetuity these very important sites. I think many of them are just being seriously threatened right now, development, neglect, vandalism, and other factors. Let's talk a little bit about your views on historic preservation.
Well, my views on historic preservation, I'm also a member of the West Whiteland Township Historical Commission. Through local commissions like that, you get to try to save as much as you can some of the historic fabric that some of these communities have. But you're right, a prime example of looking at it is what's being done in Princeton. They're trying to save that battlefield from actually a college. So it's sort of weird how you have different entities that you could go against. But yeah, certainly money's being pumped back into development to build these certain structures, and you have to be sensitive to the historic area that you're around or the historic structures that might be nearby. Some townships and some boroughs have historic districts or have historic overlays that they try to keep this stuff away from if they possibly can. But it's also, I think, up to some of the citizens, too. If they feel that they want to save something, if something's worth saving, become active either in the historical commission or with that entity, like the Brandywine Battlefield or the Paoli Battlefield. It really does help.
I agree. I think with historic preservation, it requires a pretty detailed research effort. For example, one friend of mine who's done a lot of research on the Battle of the Brandywine has told me that there's a site around the what is called the Crabilly Farm off of Route 922, which is actually supposedly a place where the Hessian soldiers marched around and perhaps after the Battle of the Brandywine, and it is being threatened with commercial development. He's done a lot of research, and he's hoping to have that site, again, right off of Route 922, to be preserved in some type of an historic trust. We are seeing a lot of reductions in government spending all around us. I mean, there are sound reasons for making certain cutbacks, but we often see precious sites like Brandywine or Paoli or others being left to potentially deteriorate. How do you think people can best assist in historic preservation?
Well, being a serious lesson, I think people need to come be a little more vocal about what they believe in. And we've heard a lot of things about, American pride, Americanism, being proud of your country, being, able to educate. Here's the ground where this happened. It's hard to go to point to a strip mall and say there was a battle fought here, a very important battle that was one of the turning points in the American Revolution. Obviously, you don't want to do that. People can't touch, can't see, can't feel, can't experience what it's like to stand in a field. Paoli is pretty much the actual field, the part that saved, the little tiny nugget that we saved from, basically the final death nail. That acreage is, you can go there and stand and sort of feel what it was like that night on September 20th when the, in 1777, when the British attacked. And I think that if people do want to help, you can donate your time and talent to either that organization or to going to meetings to fight for things, or also donate money. There are a lot of good, worthwhile events that not only our battlefield but other organizations have. Attend those events, spend the money, help preserve our future.
Now, is the Paoli Battlefield Preservation Fund, is that currently asking for donations from the public?
Yes. If you go to our website, we have a link, a PayPal link that you can click on to donate any amount you want. We also have events that run throughout the year to help generate not only funds for our cause, but also attention to get the education out there to educate the public about what happened at Paoli.
Exactly. Once these sites are gone, that's it. It's done. They're gone forever. And I've been actively involved with a lot of local historical societies. I was on the board of the Chatsford Historical Society, also the board of Brandywine Battlefield. I've walked many historic battlefields, probably the best known, of course, Gettysburg. It is truly sacred ground. And it's hard to call a parking lot anything close to that. But if you let these sites go and get developed, it will be gone forever.
For instance, in Paoli, you have a grave site there that has the remains of 52 dead Americans that fought and died in that battle that are buried right there. You can actually see the grave site. You can see the 1817 monument that the Republican Artillerists of Chester County set up and put there as a memorial to these people. You can see the 1877 monument that was also dedicated for the centennial anniversary of that battle. It's important to remember that these veterans died, and this is hollow ground. And as you say, if somebody comes along in development, it's never going to go back to the way it was.
I have a related question regarding grave sites or cemeteries. I mean, as I understand it, if there is a grave site or an actual cemetery, that land is generally pretty difficult to change in terms of its status. In other words, if it's a cemetery, it almost always remains a cemetery, and perhaps even with historic grave sites like Paoli. Can you comment on that? I mean, is there a chance that there would be any zoning changes?
Yeah, usually it is hard to move something like that, but sometimes there has been, you know, we've seen where even in Philadelphia they're doing archaeology and they're finding, you know, a grave site that was abandoned that somebody built over. Mm-hmm. It does happen from time to time. There was something actually in Westtown Township, somebody I'm friends with in the Westtown Historical Commission actually is fighting expansion near a cemetery, an old mm-hmm. sort of forgotten cemetery. Mm-hmm. That's there. I mean, in Paoli, in this case, it's walled in where the soldiers are, but that parcel behind it, that was going to be sold to a housing developer. Mm. So, you know, we were lucky enough to save that last portion of the battlefield that was undeveloped, that was basically farmer's field for a while, from ever being developed. And now we're in the process of you know, fixing it up, trying to get more educational things, audiovisual aids to help in taking tours, and possibly even one day building a visitor center there.
Excellent. I know you have a kind of a Remember Paoli Day in September each year. Can you talk about that?
Sure. We call it the Paoli Battlefield Heritage Day, and we struck upon that name because it was something that was a custom. It started in 1817, and then sort of after the Civil War, it morphed into the Malvern Memorial Parade. The Malvern holds their memorial parade a week after Memorial Day. And the reason that happened was because as the Civil War veterans aged, it would be hard to get them all into these different parades that happen on the same date. So one town chose the day before, one chose the day of, Paoli chose the week after.
Excellent.
Just sort of how it worked in the draw. But this is something that goes back to that heritage of having the parade, having a remembrance ceremony, because it is for the veterans. This event, we have a military timeline. We have reenactors in the French and Indian War, the Rev War, War of 1812, World War I and II, the USO, Vietnam, and also the National Guards there representing today's troops. We also have lots of vendors. We also have lots of crafters. We have a lot of local historical sites. We have information for the kids. We have a Paoli passport that they can go around and get stamped at the different encampments. They ask questions to reenactors, and you know, to get help in filling it out. We also give them prizes.
Excellent, excellent. I think we're a little short on time, but I know you have a lecture series coming up at the General Warren Inn. When is that, in January?
It's the second Monday of each month, and this January it starts back up at the General Warren Inn, and John Nagy will be there to talk about mutinies and rebellions in the Continental Army.
Very good. Thank you so much, Jim, for being our guest today on Living History. For more information, people can go to the website at paolibattlefield.org or rememberpaoli.org. Be sure to join us next week when on Wednesday, December 16th at 1 p.m. Eastern, we'll be speaking with local author and historian Bruce Mowdy, and he'll be talking about his book on the Johnston Gang, and we welcome callers and listeners. So again, thank you all for tuning in to Living History.